Welcome to the Rooted in Change podcast.
Hey everyone, my name is Jan and you're listening to the Rooted in Change podcast. This show features European clean tech champions and their solutions to tackle the climate crisis. Today's guest is Kartik, co-founder and CEO at Stockholm Water Technology. Clean water is one of the most important topics of our time and even a sustainable development goal. One key approach is to purify water, especially wastewater. And this is exactly what the team at Stockholm Water Technology does. They have developed a water purification technology using only electricity, removing contaminants and recovering valuable nutrients. We'll dive into how this technology works in just a second and obviously also why it's important. Welcome, Kartik.
Thank you.
Now, the first question to my guest is always, what's your background? So tell me, who are you as a person?
All right. So you probably have encountered this before, but like many founders, I have a mixed background.
Yeah.
So I'm an engineer, electronics engineer from power electronics area. I used to work with the defense avionics sector when I started out. And after that, I wanted to get into clean tech, but I had a little bit of a gap where I chose something else, and I was working for back-end Hollywood studios.
Right.
So I used to do work on editing of movies before they were released with all the big studios.
Wow.
But that was more of a transition. Right. And then I moved into clean tech. I did my master's and my PhD in energy and water. And part of my PhD is what we have developed into a company in Stockholm Water Technology. And personally, I would say that I'm quite adventurous. I have been a sportsman before. I used to be an athlete in India. I have played for football clubs in India and Thailand and Oman.
Wow.
And I'm a rescue diver in scuba diving, and I love going for caving adventures, which I used to do
Wow.
a lot in Oman. So I like to do a lot of things. I'm a little old now to do many of those things, but
Right.
yeah, it's there in the background.
Yeah. And quite an unusual journey, I have to say. I mean, I do think there is a stream of founders who have been professional athletes before. I think you can learn a lot from that life and bring that to entrepreneurship. I don't know whether that has been your experience as well.
I would say so. You know, this is one thing that keeps, which I keep remembering. My coach used to, he used to train me for 400 meters.
Right.
And at that time, the track that we had was 200 meters. So we used to go two times for a 400 meter track. And he would tell me, run the first 200 meters fast. Okay. And he would time me on that. And when I come to the end of the 200 meters, he'd be like, now I want you to run the second 200 meters even faster.
Right.
So so that was his way of training. You always exceed your limits. And that's how you keep pushing your limits, you know, further and further and further out. It's standard for, it's a kind of a training mechanism for your mind and your body that you don't know your limits till you have pushed them to the
And I guess
very
also
limit.
the discipline, I feel, sort of with professional sports, you know, it's a longer journey because it's quite repetitive. I would say, like, you do the same exercises over and over again, and the progress that you experience, I would assume, not being a professional athlete myself, is quite incremental, right? Like, you don't have that wow moment. And I think this is also how it feels building a company. Progress is often slow, but when you look back, you see how much you achieved. So there's that parallel as well.
Yes, and that's something that kind of parallel with how if you have kids and your parents see your kids after a few years and they say, wow, they've grown so much. But then you're like, I don't know. You know, it's been the same for me. So it's the same with a company.
Yeah, it's true.
For us, as people who are involved every day in its operations, sometimes we forget to notice how much you move forward.
Yeah.
Because everything is, like you said, is gradual,
Right.
But for people who see from the outside, yes, and that's kind of motivating when somebody tells it from somebody outside tells you,
Yeah.
wow, you've grown so much. And you're like,
Right. You've come so far.
Right. Yeah. I didn't think about it that way. You know, I'm only thinking about the problems every day.
Right.
That's what happens.
It's also quite natural to sort of, you know, you need to put your attention to sort of The real issues at hand, and can't just always be looking back and praising yourselves. I mean, at times you probably should, but
That's
it's
true.
for your company, it's more helpful to look at what's ahead than what you've achieved in the past.
Yeah.
Just one last question before we actually dive into the, stock and watch technology and what you guys do. You mentioned the films and the Hollywood experience as well. I mean, that's quite unusual as well. Did you learn anything there? Because they are quite large earning organizations, long projects as well. Was there anything that you could use for your master's PhD, or was that just sort of a one thing that you came across, wanted to do, and it worked out?
I did that mostly because it was a job which would go on from 4 in the evening to 12 in the night, so that I could
Right.
take up another course during the day. So I was
Smart.
doing a course on artificial intelligence. I was
Yeah.
getting myself up for a master's course.
Okay.
Now, the thing that I learned there was a lot of patience, because
Yeah.
one of the things that I had to do there was watch movies before they are released. So it's very high security area. You cannot take in or take out anything. And then you don't have to look at the movie, you have to look for errors on the screen. So it's like, being attentive to small things. But I would say it was more of a stepping stone for me before I changed my career.
Right. Yeah, and I think maybe just the sort of what you described also as well, being attentive to the small errors, and being quite focused on something that most people normally would enjoy as,
A
taking the
break.
brain off and taking a break and being like relaxing, for you is the opposite experience, right? Being sort of hyper focused, being like, right, there is something that I spotted and so on. Interesting. All right, let's move to what you do now. So I mentioned before you founded, you're the founder and CEO of Stock and Watch Technology. What is it that you do as a company?
Right. So at Stockholm Water, we build systems, water treatment systems, and these systems are based on our own patented technology, which is called electrocapacitive technology, and the short form is CAP3D. So the core technology basically is what we call it's think of it as a battery. We build a cell, and we incorporate number of cells into a battery, and then what we also do is incorporate batteries into a system. So we build the entire system for water treatment. And we build water treatment systems for industries, small municipalities. But we initially started out as water treatment systems for drinking water for people who are not connected to the municipal water grid. So,
Right, so off
yeah,
grid.
off grid, yes.
Okay. And what's the secret sauce there? So, I mean, you described your journey from master's, PhD, and sort of moving into climate and clean tech. What did you discover that no one else is able to do? What's sort of unique about Stockholm Water?
This technology comes out. There are two founders in this company. So one is a full professor at the K.T. Scholl Institute of Technology, Professor Joydeep Dutta, and he was the one who actually started working on this back in 2007 in Thailand. And I joined him in Thailand when I wanted to pursue my master's as a master's student. And initially, I actually started working on solar energy. Right. So I worked on quantum dot solar cells, and we had a patent, and we tried to commercialize it, and we failed. And then Professor Dutta got an opportunity to, get me into a position to work for the water treatment line. And he had come to a certain point by that time where he had already showed that this te core technology is working, and now we need to make a product out of it to make small prototypes. And that's what I did as my in my PhD and my postdoc. Basically, fine-tuning the technology, figuring out how to get it into a product form, to a point where we saw that now this can be commercialized. So we started the company. Now, what is the secret sauce here is that this technology using electricity to attract contaminants. It's like a magnet attracts metal species. That's the whole concept behind it. It has been there from late 1960s around. But this has been typically used only for removal of charred species like metals, salts, those kind of ingredients, contaminants. We have adapted our technology in a way that not only can we remove these standard species like salts and heavy metals, but we also kill bacteria, we remove pharmaceuticals, we can remove certain amounts of PFAS, pesticides, a wide array of contaminants in one single step, and also with very low energy. So that's been the innovation that we have.
Right. And Maybe let's focus a bit on how, because water treatment obviously is super important. It becomes more and more important as we're experiencing global populations, and with the climate crisis showing its effect. Water scarcity is an issue, and then having contaminated water, turning that into clean water is a crucial step there, as I mentioned also before in the intro with the Sustainable Development Goals. How does normal water treatment work, and what's broken there? Why is your solution? Because obviously you explained, it only uses electricity, but what's sort of better than the incumbents or existing water treatment solutions? Because I would assume there's already a lot of water treatment solutions out there that have been established and have been on the market for longer than you have.
Yes, and this is one thing to understand with water treatment. In water treatment, everything is possible. You can remove any kind of contaminants
Right.
you want to remove. It comes down to how easy it is to manage and how cost effective it is, right? So that's where the differentiation always comes. And any new technology which works on, coming into the market is they have their unique areas of focus. You probably have heard the new buzzword in water treatment is PFAS removal,
Yes.
PFAS, right? That doesn't mean other contaminants have disappeared. They still exist and they still have to be managed. It's just that we found another new contaminant in the stream which needs to be managed. But the concept there is not that it could not be managed before. The concept is how can we manage it more sustainably and more cost effective,
Right.
right? And in most cases, until now, you never. There's also one more thing to understand. Water treatment does not destroy contaminants unless it's bacteria. It just separates the contaminants more often than not. So we typically end up pushing the problem from one place to another, right? So that's what we do. So with Stockholm Water Technology, there were two aspects that we wanted to bring in terms of uniqueness. One was in a standard water treatment line. To remove a wide array of contaminants, you need two or three technologies working together in series. It's always very complex to connect two technologies because each one has its own
Yep,
quirks.
unique, exactly.
Yeah. So if we could remove multiple contaminants in one single step, it makes it much easier for the customer to implement and also more cost effective.
Right. And yeah,
Second.
that's obviously what they're looking for, right? Instead of having two or
Yes.
three different processes, machines, technologies, companies,
Yeah.
choosing one supplier makes a whole lot of sense for them.
Yes. And the second aspect was flexibility. In all cases of water treatment, typically in filters or membranes, you get a binary output, so 0, 1. You have one quality on the input, one quality in the output. We want to give flexibility. In our system, with software control on the power delivery and the other aspects that we have as a parameter, you can choose the quality of the water. You can change it every minute if you like. So within a given range, you have analog control on the water quality. This gives one more advantage. Some customers have specific contaminants which are regulated, and they only want to focus on those contaminants. They don't want to worry about the others because they don't really matter from an environmental perspective. So then we can tailor our system to focus only on that specific contaminant while ignoring most of the others. So your total cost of operation reduces. So
Right.
that's been the key aspects.
Right. So they're not overshooting the target there because the purification process is ultimately tailored to them. But instead of having a tailored solution, which in turn would be super costly for them to have a, off the or a uniquely designed technology, you basically just turn the control and adjust it to their process, making it very cost efficient for them.
Yeah, no hardware changes, software
Right.
changes
Yeah,
towards the
exactly.
idea.
Yep. Gotcha. And who are your customers? Because you mentioned a couple of minutes ago that, there's off-grid applications, and there, I would assume there's multiple arrays where you need to treat wastewater or turn it into clean water and so on. So maybe you can talk a bit about that.
One business that we started with initially was drinking water for homes and small communities. These are communities which is quite common in Sweden, actually, wherein they don't have municipal water supply. So they depend on the groundwater or the lake
Yep.
water, surface water. So And Sweden as a country has it's reasonably mineral rich, so the water can be quite contaminated with various kinds of contaminants, ranging from radioactive nucleides to iron, manganese, salts, everything. So we provide systems between the groundwater and the house, so everything in between we manage. So as long as the customer has a pump to pump out the water from the ground, we ensure it's cleaned and repressurized to the main pipeline of the house. So that's one business. The other is wastewater from industries, so especially manufacturing sectors and stuff. So these many of these companies, there's no standard water quality that we get. It depends on what's the water input and what the company is manufacturing or using it for. When they discharge the water, very often there's a lot of heavy metals which can come into the water stream, and we are very good at removing heavy metals from the water. So instead of adding chemicals to the water, which is the standard technique for removing heavy metals, we ensure that nothing is added, but you get the same result. So there's no sludge formation or anything. And the third sector was nutrient removal. So we're very good at removing nitrates, phosphates, ammonia from the water, and not just removing, but actually concentrating them for reuse. And again, these contaminants are common in one industry is fish farms. So if you're growing fish on land, it's quite it's something it's an industry which is
Like
growing.
aquapons.
Aquaponics,
Hydroponics, yeah.
recirculating aquaculture systems, RAS, that's called. And also these contaminants are very common in municipal wastewater treatment plants. So they're the ones which are regulated always, because they lead to, if they escape into your water bodies, they lead to the green algae formation, eutrophication. And the
Those are
techniques
often
to,
the byproducts from agricultural applications, right, that we see.
yeah, also from human waste. So our ones, we produce a lot of nitrates and phosphates in our waste. So, and the typical techniques to use them have been either destroy the nitrates and phosphates or precipitate them as a sludge, which makes it impossible to reuse, right? Because they're also expensive. So our technique allows this kind of contaminants to be reused while also removing them. So these are the three sectors.
And how far have you come from sort of turning that idea that you came across into turning it to company? You expressed that well into addressing those three sectors. So what's your traction like?
We've come a reasonable way. We have around 36 systems customers in 10 different countries, all over Europe. We also have early customers in the Middle East, in Saudi Arabia, and also in India. And we have customers for these very segments. We have working with a fish farm in Portugal, and also with fish farms in Denmark and Norway. We have more than, I think, approximately 20 customers in Sweden who depend on our system for drinking water, the largest of them being a small municipality of around 27 or 30 homes, which has a specific fluoride problem. And we also have some industrial park customers. I mean, we've recently partnered up with the Saudi Water Authority through our partnership in the Middle East. So we are definitely moving forward, and we've come to a point where we can deliver systems in various parts of the world. What we need to do now is basically scale up our manufacturing ability. So that's where we are.
And I mean that's an interesting moment in time, I would assume, to be in, so to sort of move from a smaller scale operation to really scaling up the manufacturing capabilities and capacity to then being able to deliver the technology globally. What so far, if you look back, what's been the most exciting but maybe also most challenging part of scaling the company up until this point for you?
It was the first 2 years when we started delivering systems. It was 2021 and 2022. And, just like most companies or founders, we thought we can do everything, right? Because we can do
Well,
everything
I
in our
think you
life.
have to think this, because otherwise you wouldn't dare to move outside there at all. So I think that's a very good mindset to have.
I agree. I agree. It's very good mindset to have. And then when you actually start putting systems, you learn the hard truths, right? There are some things you
That's
can
true.
do and some things you cannot do. And then you recalibrate and redesign and stuff. And that process, you're doing it while you have paying customers, which is very, very difficult because you're constantly implementing changes, both hardware and software. And then you have customers where, you have to travel, like either you have to take a flight or you have to travel by boat, or you have to travel like 4 to 5 hours by car for each customer. And then you have to implement it at each customer facilities. So that part was very intense. I mean, our company used to be working. The first employee would come in at 5:30 in the morning. The last employee would leave at 9:30 in the night every single day, okay, including very often weekends. So that part was very rewarding, but also it was a very steep learning curve for us.
I can
And we
imagine,
overcame that. Yeah, we went through
which
that
is
process.
exactly which is the most important part, right? Like to move past that and implement those learnings then going forward. And maybe then you describe well sort of what your challenges have been up to this point. What's the challenge going forward in terms of scaling up the company and the manufacturing capabilities?
We don't see too many challenges in terms, technically at least, in terms of scaling up manufacturing capacity. We know exactly how to do it. There are some decisions we have to make, however, on how you want to build the business, because water treatment as a business can be multiple, right? You can get money for selling systems. You can
Or you could sell
basically,
the clean water.
exactly, you could sell the water as a service model, or you could also make a lot of money based on customer support and servicing contracts, right? Not just water. So each organization, I mean, you have to build it differently. How much manpower we need to have and where should we have manufacturing? So those are decisions that we are looking at now in terms of how do we scale this as a full-grown business. What are we actually going to focus on delivering long term to the customer? So that's where
And
we are.
obviously also those decisions influence heavily your capital requirements, right? Like if you're supplying water as a service, then you need to finance all the equipment yourselves, which is quite capital intensive, I would assume. So compared to, customers buying that equipment from you, and you ultimately just sell the technology, but not the end result that the customer is looking for. So those are two different ways.
But there's one more thing to add here. Customers are always going to have options, whether to buy your
Which is
system or not.
important.
Until now, at least what our customers have always told us is that where we differ a lot from any other company which is giving them a service is we are very responsive and they love the customer service. So that's great to hear. But to have an organization which does that, you need manpower. And as you know, manpower in Europe can be reasonably expensive. So how do you build that part into your organization without having a very expansive manpower requirement? It's also something that we need to see. Or do we work with partners who can then do this, do this? But then we have to find good ways of training them, and so there are a lot
And
of different
quality
things,
control.
quality control and stuff. So there are a lot of different things that we need to see how to take it forward. So that's where,
Which is then the exciting part, I feel, at this scale-up journey that you're at, that the challenge has moved from, does the technology work to, and, will we be able to turn this into a product that people buy to, right? People are buying it, which is great. But now the challenge has moved to sort of, right, I have this technology, it works. And customers might have questions that they love our service so far. How do we do this puzzle piece? It's a very different question compared to the tech questions that you've been answering before, but probably equally exciting and sort of, just turning operations more globally. And I guess the other part is also, where does this service sit? Because obviously, your customers might need at one point boots on the ground, and that's different if your customers are in Saudi Arabia. It doesn't really help you if you have a great service team just in Sweden, to say that. So, interesting questions there.
It's something to think about and something to decide internally. But I think these are strategic decisions, and some of them you're going to get right, some of them you're going to learn in the process.
Yeah,
So,
exactly. You're going to iterate and find the right answers. That actually brings me to my next question. So, if you look 3 to 5 years ahead, where will Stockholm Water be, do you think?
In 3 years, we hope to be at a point where we have good partnerships in at least two regions of the world, Europe and Middle East, to be able to deliver at scale. I think at that point, we might be known in these regions, but we won't be known as a brand globally or anything like that. In 5 years, I hope that there'll be more recognition for the brand in terms of, there was an ad which I saw very early on in which one Steve Jobs was talking about how to brand Apple. And then he spoke about how Nike, which was a commodity, had branded itself, that nobody actually thinks about shoes when they think about Nike. They think about the feeling. And that's something that we would like to have people think about Stockholm Water too, that we are consistent with our goal to conserve water. It's not just about cleaning water for that specific application. Something has to be combined in terms of environmental aspect and the product, which should be intuitive to a customer when they hear our name. And that's what we want to get to.
Yeah. And I guess your vision is bolder and broader than just the selling the technology, right? I think the way you described it before, also looking at the existing approaches to purify water, to either say, look, it's a cost question, or sort of the flexibility to turn wastewater and adapt processes to make it really easy, really simple, yet economically viable, and to do this for multiple applications. I think all of this needs to be encompassed in a brand and really speak the subtext there and translate or be sort of bring that message home for people.
Yes, it's going to be a journey, I think. None of this is going to happen overnight, and
No.
we are
Yeah, and
prepared for
especially
it.
brand building takes
Yeah,
time. You can't just voice that.
it's very difficult to build it, very easy to make it fall. So, that's also something that happens.
That's true. Then again, I think this is in the B2B space that you're in, oftentimes I would say the dangers are less than in the B2C space, where you're more prone to those, brand reputation issues around, do we have a crisis coming up because someone posts on social media this and this, and you end up in a shitstorm. Most B2B brands hardly ever experience that because your customer base is also different. They don't hang out on the same social media channels and so on. They need different materials from you. They also have different understanding of what it is that you're producing as content. Yet equally, I would argue that building a strong brand obviously still helps you in that space to sort of stand apart from the competition and move the needle in your favor.
I agree to that, yes.
Well then, I have one last question for you, which is connected probably to where we started our conversation today. You explained being a professional athlete, running and going for the well, going literally in circles when you were training, to now founding and running Stockholm Water. What is it that keeps you going? Because you could have chosen an alternative pathway, right? You could have chosen a relaxed corporate job somewhere, I would assume, with your education, and yet you chose the hardship of the entrepreneur, as you also described before, sort of the challenges that you had to overcome. Long days, weekends, and so on. There's more relaxed versions of this life, so to say. But what is it that keeps you going and keeps you motivated to still pursue this?
Yeah, one thing was it was not that I planned for it, as most I think entrepreneurs have it just comes along that
Yeah, that's true.
you end up doing this, and there's a little bit of a mindset thing which I've been trained in. If you take up something, finish it.
Good.
Don't leave it halfway.
Yeah.
So irrespective of how
See
difficult
it
it
through
gets,
until the end.
see it through. That's also something you learn in the sports. Never give up till the last minute. So anything can change. And so I would say that as a motivation for me, there are two things. One, which is more, I'd say environment related and stuff. The other is more personal. And I would say more, what's the right term for it? Selfish. Yeah. So I think one aspect is obviously I would like to do something which can make a difference in the water treatment sector. Now I've chosen water treatment sector because it was something that I worked on and also something that I've experienced partially in my life at certain times to have no water and how difficult it can be. But also there's a personal aspect to it that at least when you pass away, when you leave something behind, there's something that you've done good that at least if even if it's not the world, it's the people close to you remember you for, you know. And to have to leave that meaning, and I would say that that's also something that I aspire. So that would be more on the selfish side of it.
To
Yeah.
sort of have that legacy.
Legacy, yeah, something like that. Yeah, that would be very nice. Yeah.
I think that's a very good description. That one that I can relate to say, look, if you look back, and we had this this part of our conversation as well, looking back and looking ahead, to say, look, when you look back at your life, you really did something well and something important, which is a legacy, right? Providing or purifying water, providing clean water to people is one of the most crucial missions there is, and one of the most important missions going forward, as this problem will only intensify and become more prominent. So I think that's a really good selfish mission
I would think so.
to
Of course, I mean, you can have meaning for people close to you in different ways, but this is the
Definitely.
way I have, and this is what I plan to do. Yeah.
Wonderful. Well, Kartik, thank you so much for these insights. I'm looking forward to seeing Stockholm Water achieve that global recognition within the next 5 years. Maybe we'll do a check-in then and see how far you've come. It was lovely talking today. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much, and a pleasure to be on this podcast. Yeah. Thanks, Jan.